Americans are saving more and spending a little more.
And, you guessed it, they're making a little more, too.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, hello, I'm Bill Radke.
Happy Friday. I'm Steve Chiatakis. It's the Midday Update from Marketplace.org on this first day of October. How's the American consumer doing? We're going to get some analysis of new numbers out today. TARP turns two, and like a screaming child, people are still not amused. And all the business news in a Marketplace Minute. But first, the government posted some encouraging personal spending and income numbers. The Commerce Department today said spending was up 0.4% in August and incomes rose 0.5%, both numbers more than analysts expected. Jill Schlesinger is editor-at-large at CBS Money Watch. She's with us for our Friday morning chat from New York. Hi, Jill.
Good morning.
Didn't we get a consumer confidence report earlier this week? Tell me if I'm wrong here. That was pretty low. How do we square this spending report today that looks not so bad?
Well, you know, it's amazing. The Conference Board said the consumer confidence index dropped to the lowest level in 7 months. But you know what? For years, this index has been a pretty poor indicator of consumer behavior. That's why this income and spending report is so important. It reflects what people actually do, not what they say or how they feel. And the difference between the income and the spending number means that people have a little bit extra money to save.
So what people say and what they do are two different things. Okay. I want to talk about savings. Why are people saving more money? I mean, this is a downturn, right? They have more money to save?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Remember when the early 80s, our parents were telling us that they saved every dime of every dollar they made? They really did. Savings rate in the early 80s was 12%. It went negative for a couple of months in the mid-2000s. But the Great Recession has really shaken some sense into America. Americans. It's brought us back to the basics. They're paying down their debt. They're rebuilding their savings. And you know what, though? They've got a long way to go. We've got some reports that retirement savings are underfunded, but at least we're in the positive territory. We're rebuilding towards that 10% number. Just do what your parents say. You know, save the dime of every dollar you make.
Jill Schlesinger, a pretty optimistic report there, then, you think, huh?
Absolutely.
All right, from CBS Money Watch, we appreciate it.
Let's continue the analysis this morning. We welcome Chief Economist Chris Lowe at FTN Financial joining us from New York. Hi, Chris.
Hey, good morning.
Income and spending rose in August. Should we be cheering?
Well, look, the good news is that we had better than expected consumption, which means GDP growth in the quarter was probably 2%. Everybody thought 1.5% just yesterday, so that's certainly good. The bad news is there would have been no income growth at all without the expansion of unemployment insurance over the summer. So it just shows how reliant we still are on stimulus for growth.
And that's sort of what the White House is saying today. They're going to release this report saying the stimulus plan was worth the money. Many voters seem to disagree. What do you think?
Well, that's right. And what the White House report shows, according to the Washington Post, is that they managed to spend an awful lot of money in a very short period of time, $550 billion in about a year, with only 2% fraud, which is a better rate than normal government spending. Of course, what the critics say is we still didn't get enough jobs to give us a sustainable expansion.
Right. That's Chief Economist Chris Lowe at FTN Financial. Chris, have a good weekend.
You too.
Automakers released their September sales figures later today. They're expected to show an increase. Also today, the White House will propose a new fuel economy standard. More on that from Marketplace's John Dimsdale.
Government standards imposed last year require carmakers to achieve an overall minimum of 35.5 miles per gallon by 2016. The Transportation Department is expected today to propose pushing the industry to reach 53 miles per gallon by 2025. That means many more electric-powered cars. Right now, hybrids, which combine a gas engine with a battery-powered electric engine, hold the most promise. But Bill Visnick, senior editor at Edmunds.com, says hybrid sales are down this year.
The real train wreck in this whole situation always has been gasoline prices. When gasoline prices remain low, as they have been now for a couple of years, Americans traditionally have never been very interested in fuel economy with their cars.
Visnick says battery storage technology will also have to improve and become more affordable if the government's more ambitious fuel economy goals are to be realized. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
And here is a bet that Americans will stay interested in fuel economy. Nissan's Leaf, that's the Japanese automaker's new electric car, goes on sale in December. 20,000 people have pre-ordered one. There's a waiting list to buy the Leaf. But Marketplace's Eve Tro tells us another way to take one for a spin.
Just turning on the Leaf feels kind of futuristic. After that ethereal startup, a screen blinks on to show how much juice the battery has and how far you can drive before it runs out.
So it will tell you that anything within that shaded circle is within your range. And then you can see there's charging stations right there. You can identify where those are and hit with one button. It'll tell you how to get to one of those.
Jeff Morrell is a vice president at Enterprise Rental Car, which owns this Leaf. The company will start renting Leafs, and yes, it's Leafs, not Leaves, this December. The test markets are in Arizona, California, Tennessee, Washington, and Oregon. Morrell says Enterprise will prep any customer who wants to try one.
We'll have conversation with you about where you're going, what your use for the vehicle is going to be. If you have a garage in your home, because this car comes with an adapter for 110 charging, which is likely in your garage, if you drive 200 miles in a day, we'll know that, and so we won't recommend the Nissan Leaf.
Because its range is only about 100 miles fully charged. Morrell says Enterprise bought 500 Leafs for its pilot program.
We think that's powerful in terms of speeding the adoption of the electric vehicle to the mass market.
I don't think this is going to be converting potential new buyers.
Ray Wirt edits the car website, jalopnik.com.
It's all about marketing.
Wirt says the 500 Leafs are just 1/3 of 1% of Enterprise's fleet. But the company wants to look green and cutting edge to hip customers.
I think these are likely going to be the people who would have been buying one anyway. Or maybe they're on the waiting list for a Nissan Leaf and they just want to be able to drive it.
He says any company that rents the Leaf is likely to charge premium prices, and that will limit takers too.
In most people's renting cases, it's all about the price. It's going to be easier for people to get a Toyota Corolla or a Chevy Cobalt.
He says on the national level, the rental market for electric cars will likely follow the buyer market, not the other way around. In Los Angeles, I'm Eve Tro for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Friday, the first day of October. I'm Steve Chiatakis. For the latest look at the markets, check out the numbers at our website, marketplace.org. We're going to get a take on the global perspective now, what's happening in business and economics around the world and how it affects us in the United States. It could take even longer for global employment to return to pre-financial crisis levels. The United Nations International Labor Organization says continued budget cuts in the developing world will hit jobs in a lot of places. The BBC's John Bithrie is with us from London with that. Hi, John.
Hi there, Steve.
How extensive is this ILO report?
Well, the ILO's looked at the levels of employment in 69 countries, both developed and developing. It says that there are 23 million more people out of work now than there were before the onset of the banking crisis and the global recession. About 2/3 of those job losses are in the US and Europe. And from what the ILO is now saying, it's going to take even longer than earlier estimates for the labour market to rebound. That's because governments, particularly in Europe, are running scared over deficits and slashing public spending, so the ILO says employment won't recover until 2015.
And what's the ILO, John, saying about the effects of this long-term unemployment?
The longer people are out of work, the harder it is to get back into work. The ILO says 40% of job seekers in developed countries have been out of work for more than a year, and that figure is worst among young people. The recommendation is that countries focus on training young people and reforming the financial system so savings are used more productively to create jobs.
All right, the BBC's John Bithrie in London. John, thanks.
Thank you, Steve.
In Brazil this weekend, voters will elect a new president. Whoever wins will be charged with leading one of the world's fastest growing economies. Reporter Annie Murphy has more from Rio de Janeiro.
Widely favored to win this race is Dilma Rousseff, chief of staff for current president Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva. Lula, as he's commonly called, is a former auto worker and union leader. During two terms in office, he's been moderate economically, comforting critics who initially compared him to Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez. Economist Marcelo Neri.
Caracas is not here in the sense that we respect market, but we have a strong social agenda.
Under Lula, Brazil's middle class has expanded rapidly. Economic growth is at a healthy 7% a year. Along with Dilma Rousseff, the two other main candidates are José Serra, the current mayor of Sao Paulo, and Marina da Silva, an environmentalist from the Amazon. Whoever wins isn't likely to stray far from the current economic program, but they'll have to address the widespread inequality that is still a source of concern here. In Rio de Janeiro, I'm Annie Murphy for Marketplace.
This weekend, the government winds down the Troubled Asset Relief Program. A lot of people thought TARP would cost taxpayers hundreds of billions of dollars. But yesterday, Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner said it could wind up only costing $50 billion at the most. Still, as TARP turns 2 years old this weekend, Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson reports it's just as unpopular as a screaming toddler.
The TARP was passed by the Bush administration with the support of both Republicans and Democrats. Lawmakers were hoping to save the world from financial collapse, but they're not getting many thank yous right now from the American public.
In the end, we're still in kind of the same straits. So, as far as I can tell, it didn't work at all.
That's Michael Wilson in downtown Los Angeles. This is Kevin Trevor.
I think it did help somewhat, but it's really hard to measure whether they should have done more or should have done less.
Talk about backseat driving, and the frustration echoes from coast to coast. Here in New York, we found Johanna Wiener.
It didn't help the people that needed the help, as far as I know. I mean, because I truly don't know who's lying and who isn't lying, and it has made me very mistrusting.
Many economists believe TARP did stop the financial system from collapsing. Here's Mark Zandi, the chief economist at Moody's Analytics.
That was a slam dunk success. There was no aspect of the policy response to the financial panic or Great Recession that worked out better than the bank bailout.
So how did it get so unpopular? I asked Jonathan Alter, who wrote a book called The Promise, about the first year of the Obama presidency.
The question that a lot of Americans asked was, hey, where's my bailout? These rich guys are getting bailed out. Where's mine? And where's mine is the oldest question in politics.
And he says TARP is so complicated and it's changed so many times, most Americans can't keep up with it.
First of all, voters don't even know that most of the money's been paid back because they don't pay attention to things in that level of detail. And they have conflated, many of them, the TARP bailouts with the stimulus.
The Obama administration has tried to get its message across, but Alter says officials should have followed FDR's example. In his first fireside chat in 1933, he spent a few moments talking to the American public about banking. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
To see how much money's been dished out from TARP and what's been returned, check out marketplace.org.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Friday, October 1st. I'm Bill Radke. For the latest look at the markets, I suggest the numbers at marketplace.org. The struggling retail industry showed signs of life this week. Department store chain Kohl's opened 21 stores. JCPenney announced plans to expand. Marketplace's Amy Scott has more.
The economy may be in recovery, but many retailers are still limping along. Analyst Kelly Tackett with Kantar Retail says Kohl's is the exception.
While a lot of other department stores have really closed several stores over the past couple of years, Kohl's has been on a steady pace of expansion.
Analysts say Kohl's has bucked the trend by selling designers like Vera Wang at affordable prices and opening stores in so-called power centers away from the mall. JCPenney plans to open 3 new stores next year. Retail consultant Bert Flickinger says both chains are benefiting from a shift to thrift.
We expect 5 years of frugality from shoppers from 2010 to 2015.
Low-priced Swedish retailer H&M would like to expand faster, but it said this week it will open fewer stores this year than planned. It's been stalled by a slowdown in shopping mall construction. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
And finally, here's all the week's business news in a Marketplace Minute. This week marks the end of the TARP, and the pain of that bailout still sharp. It costs less than we thought, but for all that we bought, its opponents continue to carp. Never mind that a massive default almost made the economy halt, and the fact that the push came from President Bush, voters think it's the current guy's fault. Europeans are mad because the budgets they had were wishful thinking and now they need shrinking. And who else is nervous? The Postal Service just failed to revamp the price of a stamp. The post office problem is easy to see. There's the pension they pay to a retiree. Plus, you don't need a letter to contact me. It's easy, reliable, instant, and free to put index finger to enter key. Just type in marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
And I'm Steve Chiatakis. Have a great weekend. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.